It matters only if she thought you were, and when she thought it. It's a question of motive. Motive to kill Tyler Tompkins? Bingo. Rid. Come on. This was a gruesome bloody murder with a machete. Was it? We never recovered Tyler's head. No way to examine it for blunt trauma? Maybe it was as clean as someone sneaking up from behind and hitting her in the back of the skull with a fucking rolling pin. The medical examiner said it was a blow to the back of the neck with a large knife. Yeah, and maybe Tyler was already dead when that blow was delivered. Maybe the only point of that machete wound was to make it look like Cutter. I wasn't comfortable with this discussion at all, but I couldn't disprove any of it. Angelina is not a killer. I expected him to second the notion, but he didn't. Like I told you, Abe, I've been thinking about those photographs. I've been studying them, in fact. And we stopped at a red light and Rid handed me his phone. One of the photographs of Tyler and me was on the screen. Look closely, he said. I'm looking, I said. Look at your dinner plate. I enlarged the image and zoomed in on my plate. Rid asked, what were you eating at the restaurant that night with Tyler? I was staring at the screen, my entree clearly visible in the photograph. It was a dish I'd never heard of before meeting Angelina. But after tasting hers, I ordered it whenever a restaurant had it on the menu. Osobuco. What did Angelina cook for you on the night she disappeared? I didn't answer right away. I know you remember, he said, because I ate it, loved it, and told you it was better than oxtail. Osobuco, I said. Yeah, said Rid. If you think that's a coincidence, you're a fucking moron. Angelina was messing with you, Abe. She's been messing with you. I handed the phone back to him. The traffic light turned green. Rid drove another block closer to the boomerang and pulled up to the curb. This close enough? He asked. Yeah, thanks. I opened the passenger side door, but he stopped me before I climbed out. Abe, you know we can't talk any more about this, right? I nodded. We cool then? Yeah, I said. We're cool. I stepped out onto the sidewalk, shut the door, and watched him drive away. Chapter 61. Victoria left the Beckham residence at 10 a.m. Detective Reyes stayed behind to wrap up the crime scene. The law office of Jeffrey Winters was Victoria's destination, but she took a circuitous route. She hopped onto the expressway, exited north of downtown at Overtown, and cut across the design district in a zigzag pattern of one-way streets. She'd refused any comment to the media outside the Beckham house, and several reporters had followed her, curious to know where she and the story were headed. At least two remained on her tail all through the design district. Let's go round again, boys, she said as she checked her mirror. She got back in the expressway and started the pointless journey all over again, determined to repeat as necessary until the tail was gone. Her concern wasn't so much the media per se. Rather, she didn't want Abe to find out through the media coverage or otherwise that the FBI was about to speak to his wife without him. By the third loop around the city, the last of the media vans had given up and disappeared from a rearview mirror. She parked on the street outside Winter's building, went inside, and rode the elevator to the penthouse. The young and pretty receptionist struck Victoria as polite, but not too bright. A ditz, in fact. Someone who might show up for an American Idol audition wearing a string bikini and leave in tears because no one had told her that a voice was required. The young woman offered a warm greeting, which cooled a bit when Victoria introduced herself.
You're an FBI agent? Seriously?
Yes, seriously.
Is Mr. Winters expecting you?
Only if he's really smart. The receptionist had no idea how to handle that one. Flustered, she buzzed Winter's assistant, told her that Agent Smart was in the lobby, and asked Victoria to have a seat. Victoria went to the waiting area and perused the law firm's impressive art collection, which leaned toward the ultramodern, probably from Art Basel, or from a drug dealer who couldn't pay his lawyer in cash.
"I'm sorry," said the receptionist. "What was your name again?"
Victoria had wondered how long it would take her to correct the Agent Smart mix-up. She set the girl straight and turned back to the art. Beckham's story about the attempted bribe had been intriguing, and Victoria knew exactly where Abe was going with it. A follow-up with Brian Belter was definitely in order, but first, she wanted to know what Angelina's lawyer thought about it.
"Mr. Winters will see you now," said the receptionist.
Victoria followed her down the hallway to an empty conference room. She took a seat at the glass-topped table and waited. It wasn't long before Winters and one of his associates entered. They seemed a little surprised that Victoria was alone, not the usual FBI duo. Victoria didn't bother to explain that she had her own way of doing things when she pushed the outer limits of her FBI authority, which was one reason she was back in a field office and no longer working out of Quantico at what should have been the height of her career. They exchanged introductions and sat on opposite sides of the table, two against one.
"Your client is welcome to join us," said Victoria.
"Pass," said Winter, smiling.
"That's fine. Her husband has done plenty of talking for her." His smile faded.
"Talking where?"
"I didn't mean any place specifically. Everywhere."
The lawyers exchanged uneasy glances, and then Winters focused his gaze on Victoria. "Has Mr. Beckham been talking directly to you?"
"Of course."
"About what?"
"That's what I wanted to discuss with you. See, I've been working very hard on the Cutter task force, and it's my very firm conclusion that Tommy Salvo had nothing to do with the murder of Tyler Tompkins. I've spoken to Abe Beckham about this, and he's pushing hard in the direction of Brian Belter. You know Mr. Belter, I'm sure."
"Yes, I know him. Managing partner BB&L, lawyer for Big Sugar,
and Tyler Tompkins' supervising partner.
So I totally get Abe's theory. The senior partner is betting Tyler Tompkins, rising star. Tyler gains the kind of access to Cortina Sugar that only someone who's sleeping with Brian Belter could get. She visits the company plantation in Nicaragua and witnesses appalling business practices, then comes back to Miami and calls an old friend at the state attorney's office to see if anything can be done about it. Belter finds out she's talking to law enforcement. Maybe he even discovers that Abe Beckham is her new favorite married man to sleep with, which makes Belter even crazier. Belter suddenly stands to lose his wife, his mistress, his best client, and everything else that matters to him. Tyler Tompkins ends up dead."
"I honestly have no idea what you're talking about," said Winters.
"Your client does, so take good notes, Junior," she said, glancing at the associate.
"My client knows nothing about the death of Tyler Tompkins," said Winters.
"Let's hope you're right.
But Angelina still needs to be very concerned. Her husband's theory about Brian Belter has holes, and I intend to blow those holes wide open. When I do, Abe Beckham will realize that it's pointless to keep pointing the finger at Brian Belter. When that happens, he is going to point in another direction." Winters didn't answer, but it was clear that he fully grasped Victoria's implication. Angelina would be Abe's next scapegoat.
"There's been an awful lot of talk about homicide," said Winters. "Right now, Angelina's only concern is a potential criminal charge for making herself disappear."
"It all ties together," said Victoria. "See, I watched the YouTube video, and I don't think Angelina ran out of fear of Cutter. I think she ran out of fear of her husband. But unlike some of my friends in the domestic violence unit at MDPD, I don't believe that Abe was a habitual abuser. I see it as an isolated incident. Angelina uncovered something about Tyler, specifically about her murder. I think she confronted Abe with it. Abe had his own version of events, and Angelina was afraid or refused to go along with it, so she ran. Winter showed no reaction, but the associate beside him was scribbling furiously. Victoria had planted the seeds.
"This is all very interesting," said Winters.
"There's more," said Victoria. She laid her iPad on the table and brought up the photographs of Tyler and Abe at the restaurant.
"I've seen these," said Winters. "Those are the pictures that the killer left in her mailbox."
"Another misstatement in Angelina's video," said Victoria. "She didn't get these from Cutter."
"Then who sent them?"
Victoria leaned closer, making sure she had his full attention. "Abe Beckham." The associate stopped writing. Even Winters was unable to hide his surprise.
"Why would he do that?"
"To create the impression that Cutter killed Tyler and that Abe Beckham did not. Outing yourself as a cheater is better than being convicted as a murderer."
"You know this for a fact?" asked Winters.
"Abe sent these photographs."
"Not yet," said Victoria. "But I am going to prove it. And if your client knows what's good for her, she will stop playing her husband's game and help me."
Chapter 62.
We waited until 11:35 p.m. and the end of the late local news broadcasts. The camera crews packed up their equipment, our front lawn darkened, and the media vans drove away. Across the networks, the gist of the breaking news at 11 had been that the Beckham house is no longer a crime scene, but there is no sign of Abe and Angelina Beckham and no word when they will return. Then Angelina and I went home together. Angelina entered first. I closed the door and secured it with both the deadbolt and the chain. I noticed the mark on the panel where Angelina had nailed it with a beer bottle on Friday night. So did she. We ignored it. "Home, sweet home," she said flatly. I went to the landline on the table and checked our voicemail. 38 messages, I told Angelina. Probably all from reporters. I didn't have the energy to listen to them. I hung up and silenced the ringer so that we can get through the night.
"What do we do if the news people come back?"
"Turn on the sprinklers." I was only half kidding. She didn't laugh.
"I'm getting ready for bed."
She turned and disappeared down the hallway to the master. I went to the couch and sat in front of the TV. My hand was pre-programmed to reach for the remote and surf, but I resisted. I opted for no television, not even satellite radio. Silence. The previous 12 hours had been a marital standoff, me refusing to return to the law office of Jeffrey Winters, and Angelina refusing to leave until her lawyer said it was time. The state attorney's office became my fortress. No media ambushes, no phone calls I didn't want to take. I told Carmen and the head of our public corruption unit about Belter's attempted bribery of an assistant state attorney, namely me. I intended to follow up later in the week, but my plan for the rest of the day had simply been to retreat from reality and throw myself into one of my pending cases, which proved to be impossible. One colleague after another popped by my office to show support. All had seen Angelina's YouTube video. No one said he believed her. No one said he didn't. I did notice that not a single prosecutor from our domestic violence unit came by to talk. I kept most of the conversation short. Only once had I been tempted to discuss matters in greater depth. Our head of the sexual assault unit would have been a great sounding board for my fears that something awful had happened to Angelina in the wee hours of the morning in Little Havana. Something so traumatizing that she decided to tell no one. The most experienced sexual assault prosecutor in the state of Florida had been standing right in my office, but on the heels of my talk with Ridd and his view that Angelina was messing with me, I chose not to bring it up. I wondered if I should have.
Abe.
I glanced over my shoulder. Angelina was standing in the shadows at the end of the hallway, not quite inside the living room. She was wearing her nightgown.
Are you coming to bed?
She asked.
In a little bit.
You should come now. She turned and went into the bedroom. I blinked, confused. What did that mean, you should come now? I want to lie down beside my husband. I want you to hold me. I want to make love to you. Don't sit out here till 2 and then come crawling into bed and wake me up, asshole. Okay, I said, even though she was gone. I walked to the bathroom, brushed my teeth, and pulled on a clean pair of running shorts and a t-shirt. Angelina was on her side of the bed, lying in the dark when I entered the master. I crossed the room, peeled back the comforter, and climbed in beside her. She rolled onto her back. So did I. We lay in silence, eyes open, staring at the ceiling. Darkness, stillness, utter quiet. There was no place like a bed, and nothing was more palpable than the line that ran down the middle of one.
I talked to Ridd finally, I said. What did he say?
I hesitated, not sure how to answer. That you've been messing with me, that Santos thinks you killed Tyler Tompkins.
He says he can't talk to me anymore about any of this. I'm not surprised, she said.
More silence. The air conditioner kicked on and chilly air breathed on us from above. My pupils were adjusting to the darkness and I could see cracks in the ceiling. Long, meandering cracks that reached from wall to wall. Cracks that had existed since Angelina and I had moved in and that I had never noticed. Until now.
Abe, there's something I have to tell you. My mind raced.
Was Ridd right? And was the confession coming? Was I right? And was she about to tell me what really happened to her in Little Havana?
What is it? I asked. Agent Santos met with my lawyer today.
Not what I was expecting. When?
Sometime before lunch. It wasn't a planned thing. Santos just showed up and wanted to talk.
Why?
I wasn't there, but Jeffrey said she's investigating the murder of Tyler Tompkins.
And she's targeting you.
I propped myself up on one elbow and looked at her. She remained on her back.
Why didn't you tell me this earlier?
Jeffrey didn't say anything about it till an hour ago. He was against my decision to come home with you. Telling me this was his last attempt to convince me that I shouldn't. I was glad that she'd ignored his advice, but I still didn't like it that she'd waited until we were in bed to tell me. This goes without saying, but you know I didn't kill Tyler Tompkins.
I know.
Technically speaking, Agent Santos doesn't think you did either. You just said she was targeting me. She thinks you're responsible, but she doesn't think you're the one who physically hit Tyler with a machete. It felt as if someone had just hit me with a machete. I rolled onto my back again and stared at those cracks in the ceiling. Somehow I knew they would try to drag JT into this. Do you think it's possible? No. He's always scared me. He's not a violent person. He attacked that bus driver. That was more of a misunderstanding than an attack. His father was a cane cutter. Angelina, it makes no sense. What reason would JT have to kill Tyler Tompkins? She didn't answer. See? I said. No motive.
There was no reason for him to commit this crime. None.
None, she said with a hint of nervousness. Unless you asked him to.
I was up on my elbow again and looking straight at her. Is that what you think?
No, Abe. That's what Agent Santos thinks. I moved a little closer to her, but I didn't cross that line in the bed.
Angelina, this is a game Santos is playing. She's trying to drive a wedge between us. She talks to my friend Reed and says you killed Tyler. She talks to your lawyer and says I got JT to kill her. She told Riddell that I killed Tyler? Yes. She was suddenly up on her elbow, the same reaction I'd had to her lawyer's meeting with Santos. We were eye to eye, staring at each other from opposite sides of that imaginary line down our mattress like two soldiers in the trenches. Santos thinks I killed Tyler and you didn't tell me? Why didn't you tell me? I thought it was so preposterous that I didn't need to. I said,
really?
Yes, really. Tyler was hacked to death with a machete. It was a bloody, gruesome death.
Oh, so if it had been a nice, clean bullet to the back of the head, that would be different.
That's something you could see me doing. This wasn't the time to get into rolling pins and Ridd's alternative theories on cause of death. No. I didn't say that.
She lowered herself onto her back and folded her arms atop the comforter.
Angelina, please, let's not get like this. We're playing right into Agent Santos' hands. Her strategy is to break down the trust between us. She wants us to turn against each other.
Do you trust me? She asked. It was a simple question, but the answer felt complicated.
I hesitated too long.
Abe, do you trust me? She asked again.
Yes, of course.
Don't say of course. Nothing is of course anymore. We have to rebuild.
I want to rebuild. But not if you're going to say dumbass things like, of course I trust you, honey. It's dismissive of me and everything that's happened.
She had a point. I'm sorry.
She took a breath and sank a little deeper into the mattress. I lay back and did the same.
I didn't kill Tyler, I said.
JT didn't kill Tyler. I didn't get JT to kill Tyler.
I heard her take another deep breath in the darkness.
Thank you, she said.
You're welcome.
Anything else you want to know?
Not right now.
Good.
Well, maybe one thing, she said.
What?
Just to be clear, when I close my eyes to go to sleep, JT isn't going to jump out of the closet with a machete, is he?
I knew it was a joke and maybe I should have appreciated the attempt at humor, but it didn't work for me. And I sensed that she regretted it.
No, I said, that's definitely not going to happen.
A minute passed. I wondered if she had more to say. She didn't.
Good night, Abe.
Good night. There was no kiss. I rolled onto my side and really tried to find sleep. I was exhausted, but I couldn't clear my head and disengage. The air conditioner went through another cycle. 10 minutes or more passed. I shifted onto my left side, glancing at Angelina as I rolled over. She was still on her back. Her eyes were open. I wondered if her mind was so busy that, try as she might, she just couldn't close them. Or was she dead tired and fighting to keep them open, waiting for me to fall asleep first? I breathed in and out, and wished the night would end.
Chapter 63. At 5:30 a.m., something woke me. I sat up in bed and listened. I was certain that I'd heard a noise in the living room. Angelina was still asleep.
I slid out of bed, walked quietly down the hall, and entered the living room. With sunrise more than an hour away, it was dark inside the house, and the windows were black with night. I listened for that noise again, but heard nothing. A crisp knock on the door startled me. I checked through the peephole and saw a woman on my front porch. She was holding a microphone. Behind her was a man with a camera resting on his shoulder. It was the same eyewitness news team that had interviewed me on Saturday. You gotta be kidding me. She knocked again. I didn't dare open the door. I was tempted to sneak out the back and turn the hose on her. Instead, I got my phone from the charger and tapped out a text message. I chose my words carefully, making sure that no matter how she tried to slice it up for her report, she would be the one to look like an ass. Thank you for coming by our house at 5:30 a.m. Like most people, we are asleep at 5:30 a.m. Please be off our property no later than 5:31 a.m. so that I may return to sleep by 5:32 a.m. Otherwise, I will call the police at 5:33 a.m. Once again, thank you for your pre-dawn concern and consideration. That would do it. I hit send, gave it a minute to transmit, and then watched through the peephole as she read it. She was required to leave once told to do so. It was the law, and I was a prosecutor. She texted back something along the lines of, "Please, pretty please, I'm a nice person," which I read as, "My razor-sharp claws come out only if you're stupid enough to open the door." I didn't bite. She wedged her business card into the doorframe. "Oh yeah, I will definitely call you, lady," and left with her crew. I returned to the bedroom. Angelina had slept right through the knocking, which surprised me, until I noticed the molded wax earplugs. They were for swimming laps, and with that watertight seal, she probably would have kept right on sleeping, even if the news team had used shock grenades and a battering ram. I, however, was officially wide awake. I decided to let her sleep. I took a quick shower and dressed for the office, but I didn't feel like going in so early. I needed a diversion, a person I could talk to about something other than Tyler Tompkins, Cutter, and, frankly, Angelina. Only one such person fit the bill, and it just so happened that he was also the only guy on Earth who would be happy to see me before 6:30 a.m. I backed my car out of the garage, waved as I passed the eyewitness news team on the street, and drove to the nursing home. Luther had already eaten breakfast and was sitting outside in the courtyard, tearing off pieces of leftover wheat toast and feeding the pigeons. "Now don't fight," he said. "Can't we all just get along?" Good advice for the birds. Good advice for humans. Rodney King couldn't have said it better, I said as I approached. Luther probably didn't catch my allusion to the 1992 L.A. riots, but he was glad to see me. I told him not to get up, and he told me not to worry. It was the worn-out joke between me and an old man who was almost too frail to stand, but it still made me smile. I took a seat on the bench beside him.
"Why are you up so early?" he asked.
"The McRib is back. I wanted to be first in line." He laughed and shook his head.
"You are definitely the funniest white man I know."
We talked about him for a few minutes, and I heard all about the new physical therapist with the nice smile and soft hands. Then he told me about a friend of mine who had come to visit him. "One of my friends?" I asked.
"Victoria was her name. Victoria Santos."
I was about to explode. This was the second time Santos had pulled this stunt, first with Angelina's mother, and now with Samantha's father. What did you two talk about?
"Me, mostly. Nice girl, but she sure asks a lot of questions."
"What about?" He tossed another piece of bread to the birds. They climbed all over each other in the scramble for it.
"She wanted to know about my days cutting sugarcane."
I closed my eyes and opened them slowly, trying to keep my anger at bay. Did JT's name come up? He nodded.
Yes, it did.
How so?
I can't remember exactly how he... Honestly, I tuned her out at that point. She was asking me things like, are you sure JT never cut sugarcane? And did you pass on the tradition to your son? Kind of like asking Obama if anyone in his family kept up the tradition of picking cotton.
I would have laughed under different circumstances. But the notion that JT fancied himself a sugarcane cutter wasn't just idle curiosity. It fit perfectly with Santos's theory behind the murder of Tyler Tompkins. Luther signaled for one of the nurses, and she started toward us from across the courtyard.
Sorry, Abe, he said. I gotta pee.
That's okay. Time for me to go anyway. We said goodbye, and I went quickly to my car. Part of me wanted to drive straight to Santos's apartment and bang on her door, eyewitness news style. Nothing good would come of that. Instead, I called Rid. He was running on a treadmill, which struck me as an interesting metaphor, and breathing heavily on the other end of the line. Do you know what Santos did now?
Abe,
he said, his speech halting from the run.
We said we weren't going to talk about this anymore.
She went to see Luther. The treadmill stopped whining in the background. I had his attention.
Why?
He asked. Because he's an old cane cutter. And now Santos wants to prove that JT and I cooked up a plan to kill Tyler Tompkins and make it look like Cutter did it.
She shouldn't drag the old man into this.
She shouldn't drag me and JT into it either, Rid. You gotta help me out here.
What do you want?
Tell me what she was looking for in my house yesterday.
Abe,
he said, groaning.
Come on, Rid. This shit has gone far enough. I've been strip searched. I sat for a polygraph. She searched JT's house. She searched my house without a warrant. She ambushed my father-in-law in a nursing home, and that's just the stuff I know about.
What's Santos gonna do next? Exhume Samantha's body? He paused, but I could almost feel him coming around. Then he gave it to me. She's looking for evidence that Angelina is a smoker. She doesn't smoke. Closet smoker.
What the hell is this about?
He told me about the glowing orange dot in the parking lot across the street from the funeral home on the night of Tyler's memorial service. That sounds like something a serial killer would do, I said. Case the funeral home at one of his victims.
She doesn't think it was Cutter.
She thinks it was Angelina?
Let's just say she doesn't think you and Angelina have a healthy relationship.
No, I need more than that. I need to know what Santos is thinking, Rid. Does she see Angelina some kind of crazy stalker wife who followed me to Tyler's memorial service?
Something made her smash a beer bottle against the door after throwing you out of the house, Abe. And let's not forget the broken nose.
I didn't want to get into that again with Rid.
Okay, this is helpful. Anything else you can tell me?
Just one thing, said Rid. This is really the last time we talk about this, Abe. He hung up. I put my phone away. I'd heard the finality in his voice, and he'd meant it. This would be the last favor. I hoped I wouldn't need another.
Chapter 64. Angelina was awake and in the kitchen when I got home. The media vans were no longer outside her house. I wondered if Angelina had stolen my idea.
What'd you do? Turn the hose on eyewitness news?
She was wearing her bathrobe with her wet hair wrapped in a towel, having just showered.
Jeffrey took care of them, she said as she poured a cup of coffee.
How? She stirred in a pink pack of sweetener.
I told him what networks were out there. He called the producers and promised an exclusive first interview with me if their van disappeared. You can't promise exclusive first interviews to everyone. She tasted her coffee and shrugged.
Jeffrey can. It worked.
When are these exclusive interviews supposed to take place?
4 o'clock.
In plenty of time to air on the evening news.
Unfortunately, I'm coming down with the flu at 3:30.
I was getting tired of this game. Get dressed. I want us to have a meeting with your lawyer.
What about?
I want to refinance our mortgage. Come on, Angelina, can we just go?
Sorry.
She took her coffee into the bedroom and closed the door. I called her lawyer's office and set up a meeting with Winters for 8:30. I could not imagine why it took Angelina so long to figure out what to wear, but we didn't leave the house until 8:15. I managed to get there on time. Somehow, so did Angelina's mother.
Margaret, what are you doing here? I asked.
Jeffrey tells me whenever there's a meeting, since I'm paying the bills. Hi, Mommy. Hello, sweetheart.
Margaret said as mother and daughter embraced.
I was getting really tired of this game.
Margaret, I understand that it was your idea to hire a lawyer, but Angelina and I will pay the bill.
I want to pay.
She said, no, we'll pay. But even if you were paying, that doesn't make you the client. And this morning, the lawyer is meeting only with his client and her husband.
Margaret took a few seconds to compute what I was saying. So you want me to wait out here?
Please.
Well, okay, I guess that's okay.
It's okay, Mommy.
Have a good meeting, then. I'll be right out here if you need me.
The receptionist escorted Angelina and me to Winter's office. He was on the telephone but waved us in. We took seats in the armchairs facing his desk. He wrapped up the call but didn't come around his desk to greet us. He seemed under the gun and dispensed with the usual pleasantries.
Sorry to be rush, but I'm picking a jury at 9:30, he said. How can I help you?
Abe thinks our mortgage rate is too high, don't you, honey?
Right back at me.
You what? Asked Winters.
I have some concerns about Agent Santos. There are really two...
Sorry, Abe, said Winters. I hate to interrupt, but can you excuse us?
Excuse you?
Yes, would you step out for a few minutes before the three of us talk? I'd like to have a word with my client.
Man, was I tired of this game.
Fine, have a word, have a paragraph, have a whole fucking dictionary.
Abe, stop it, said Angelina. I'll be outside,
I said as I crossed the room. I closed the door behind me and continued down the hall. I was in no mood to wait, and with each step toward the lobby, I felt more like continuing straight to the elevator. Margaret spotted me. She was seated on the black leather couch in front of the flat-screen television.
That was a short meeting, she said.
Yeah, shorter than planned.
Well, just because you pay the bill doesn't mean you're the client.
I pushed the elevator call button 6 times. If it didn't come soon, I figured I'd just jump out the window. Margaret sank deeper into the couch and sighed.
The TV news people sure aren't warming up to Angelina's video, she said.
The bell chimed as the elevator doors opened. I let it go and walked toward Margaret.
Why do you say that? I asked. They've been picking it apart all morning.
She switched the channel back to Eyewitness News Morning Edition and turned up the volume.
Look, they're still talking about it.
I walked around the table for a better look at the TV, careful not to knock over the priceless work of art made of coat hangers and ping pong balls. The former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida was the legal know-it-all du jour on the local morning news show.
In theory, he said, law enforcement could seek reimbursement of all costs of this investigation. But that would be very unlikely, in my view, if law enforcement believes what Angelina Beckham is telling us, that she ran out of a legitimate fear that she was about to be a serial killer's next victim.
Do you believe her? Asked the interviewer.
I think the verdict is still out. A YouTube video isn't going to do it. She and everyone around her will have to answer some very tough questions.
Margaret rose from the couch. I can't watch this anymore, she said as she stepped out of the lobby and headed down the hallway. I didn't ask where she was going. The television had me riveted. It was a good thing that Margaret had left. The network was replaying Sunday evening's news conference, Jake and Margaret's plea for their daughter's return. Jake had done all the talking, but my eyes were on Margaret. The first time I'd watched it, I'd wondered if Margaret was going to live through this. It wasn't any easier to watch a second time. The receptionist came to me.
Mr. Winters is ready to see you now.
I followed her through the reception area and then stopped. The lobby area in Winters' penthouse had more glass walls than a funhouse, and I wanted to make sure I'd seen what I thought I'd seen. I was looking through three panes. A wall of beveled glass behind the receptionist, the glass door to the main conference room, and another glass door to a balcony off the conference room. Margaret was outside on the balcony, surely unaware that I or anyone else was watching. I'd never known her to smoke, never smelled it on her. But she was lighting up a cigarette. Angelina's mother was a closet smoker. I stood in the hallway and watched, imagining the glowing orange dot in the dark parking lot across the street from Tyler's memorial service. She'd been watching me. Angelina's mother had been watching me.
Mr. Beckham, are you all right? Asked the receptionist.
Yeah, I said, as we continued toward Winter's office. I will be. Chapter 65. The receptionist tapped lightly on the door to Winter's office and opened it. My phone rang as I was about to enter. The display read AAA Storage. I took the call, which was from the property manager.
Is this Mr. Beckham?
Yes, it is.
I'm calling to advise you that I'm about to open your storage unit.
Why, did I forget to pay the bill?
No, the police are here with a search warrant.
My first thought was Santos.
What police? Miami-Dade. Put one of the officers on the line.
They aren't going to talk to you, dude. I already asked them to give you a call, but they don't need you to be here. They don't want you to be here. That's the way these things work.
I knew that.
What are they looking for?
I don't know. It's on the warrant. Look, I don't get involved in the details. I just give my customers a heads up in case they want to come over or get out of town.
Thanks, I'll be right there. I hung up and stuck my head in the office.
Sorry, I gotta go.
What? Said Winters.
Something came up.
What's this about? Asked Angelina.
I don't have time to explain. Just stay here.
What am I supposed to do?
I don't know. Have another word with your attorney. Start on the thesaurus. I really have to go.
I turned and ran down the hall through the lobby to the elevator. A courier held the door open for me, and in 3 minutes I was down in the main lobby, through the revolving entrance doors and in my car. The manager had said it was MDPD, and I believed him, but I was certain that Santos was somehow behind the search. I wasn't sure how she would have found out about the storage unit. Perhaps it had come up in her visit with Luther. I dialed Santos from my car, but she didn't answer. Reed didn't take my call either. I drove faster, weaving between slower-moving cars and the morning traffic. I parked next to the squad cars outside the storage warehouse and ran upstairs to the fourth floor. The roll-up door to my unit was open. The search was in progress. Agent Santos was standing in the hallway, a tacit acknowledgement that she was operating outside her jurisdiction, the supervisor masquerading as an observer.
Let me see the warrant, I said.
This is a Miami-Dade police search, she said. Get it from Detective Reyes. MDPD my ass. I went toward my unit.
A team of officers was stacking boxes in the hallway. Some were open. Loose items were scattered across the floor. It felt wrong to see the police rummaging through Samantha's belongings, her mementos, my memories. Detective Reyes stepped out of the unit and handed me the warrant. I immediately focused on the box that listed the items covered by the search. A cane-cutting machete? I asked. Are you kidding me? Santos walked over and joined us. Your father-in-law told me he still had his old equipment. Let me count the problems I have with that, I said, glowering. One, you should have called me if you wanted to talk to Luther. Two, you said this was a Miami-Dade search, not yours. Three, even if it is technically an MDPD search, what the hell does a machete have to do with Detective Reyes and the domestic violence unit, other than the fact that you two have become Detective Frick and Agent Frack? Four, there's no machete here. What did you do with it? Nothing. How do you know it's not here? I gave it some thought before answering. Because I wanted to know if my brother-in-law was a serial killer. Why don't you just look and see for yourself? We will. The team continued its work in silence, taking inventory, checking off each box searched. I watched for a few minutes, smoldering with anger. Do you have any other warrants? I asked. Reyes ignored the question. Santos didn't even look in my direction. I walked to the stairwell at the end of the hallway, closed the door behind me, and dialed JT on my cell.
Where you been, Abe? I'm almost out of food again.
JT, listen to me. This is important.
Food's important.
Yes, food is definitely important, but this is even more important. Do you remember when the police came to your apartment with a search warrant?
Duh. You're not talking to Forrest Gump. I hate when people treat me like I'm stupid. I'm a smart man, Abe. Samantha even said I was a genius once.
I know, I'm sorry. What I meant to ask is, if you remember how the police wanted to go outside your apartment and search the deck. Forget it. It doesn't matter if you remember or not. My point is that the first warrant didn't allow them to search outside, but the police always had the option to come back with another warrant.
Oh, shit, they're coming back!
Calm down, okay? I don't know for sure that they're coming back.
Don't bullshit me! Why would you call me if they wasn't?
I just want you to be ready.
Ready?
He shouted.
How do I get ready? I can't do this again. I can't, Abe!
JT, it's going to be okay. Just...
It's this bracelet, Abe!
It's not the bracelet.
All this bad shit happened after I put on this fucking bracelet!
This has nothing to do with any of this.
I gotta get out of here.
JT, you can't go anywhere with that bracelet on. That judge will throw you in jail if you do.
I don't care! They're coming! You said it! I heard you say it. They're coming back here!
JT, I'm on the way. Stay right there.
I gotta get out, Abe! JT, just...
I stopped myself. He was gone.
Damn it! JT!
I tucked my phone away and ran down the stairwell to my car. Gravel flew and a cloud of dust rose over the squad cars as I raced out of the parking lot. With everything else that was going on, the last thing I needed was for JT to be arrested and hauled into court for violation of his house arrest. I dialed his number twice from the road but got no answer. Again, I was weaving between cars, even passing the ones that were exceeding the speed limit. I was less than a block away when I got behind a pack of cyclists who were dressed for the Tour de France, but moving at the speed of a French waltz. The pack leader flipped me the bird as I passed on the right to get around them, half on the shoulder and half on the grassy swale. My car screeched to a halt in the parking space in front of JT's apartment. I ran to the door, but it was locked. I knocked hard.
JT! Open the door!
I gave him a minute. I knocked again and put my ear to the door. I heard nothing from inside the apartment. But if he was gone, having fled out of fear that they were coming back, he wouldn't have taken the time to lock the door on his way out. I ran around the building to the rear entrance to his apartment. A fragrant burst of gardenia hit me as I rounded the corner. The tree I'd planted when Samantha and I moved in was in full bloom.
The backyard was just big enough for the deck and one tree, and I was surrounded by a 5-foot wood fence. I tried the gate, but it was locked. Another sign to me that JT had to be inside. I hopped over the fence and caught my shirt on a thorny bougainvillea bush. My sleeve ripped as I fell to the ground and rolled, and when I climbed to my feet, I was facing the deck. I froze at the sight. The pressure-treated planks that Samantha and I had laid were covered with blood. Wide, dark pools of blood.
JT!
My heart pounded as I lunged toward the deck. I stumbled and fell to my knees. Blood soaked through my pant legs, and I saw the crimson trail leading back into the kitchen. I knew that JT was in there, but I couldn't go in yet. It was probably only a split-second hesitation, but the image was searing so deeply into my brain that my delay seemed much longer. My gaze was locked on a deck painted in blood. An old cane-cutter's machete lay in the middle of it. Beside the blade was the ankle bracelet. It was still attached to JT's foot, a white spear of bone protruding from the ankle. Oh, shit, JT! Shit! Shit! I dialed 911 on my cell as I ran into the apartment through the open doorway. I followed the trail of blood across the kitchen, across the TV room, and all the way to the foyer. That was as far as JT's one-footed escape had carried him. His body was a motionless heap on the floor at the front door. I called his name and went to him. I shouted details to the 911 dispatcher as I slapped JT's face and pried his eyes open, anything to bring him back. His foot is cut off, I told the dispatcher. He's bleeding to death. Just send an ambulance. My shirt was already ripped from the thorns. I tore it into strips for a tourniquet and tied it as tightly as I could around JT's calf. I rolled him on his back and started CPR. Come on, brother. Come on. I went back and forth, 3 quick chest compressions and then pressure on the leg wound until the paramedics arrived.
Chapter 66. We held a graveside service for JT at Mount Olive Cemetery, where members of the Vine family had been laid to rest beneath the sprawling limbs of giant oak trees for more than half a century. My efforts to revive JT had been fruitless. The paramedics were too late. The massive blood loss had sent him into cardiac arrest. He was dead before they reached the hospital. A simple metal casket rested on pilings above the open grave. A green canopy shaded us from the afternoon sun. It was low-key and private. Luther, me, and the same minister who had presided at Samantha's service. I couldn't blame Angelina for not wanting to attend. Not after Tyler Tompkins' blood was found on the machete. It was Luther's cane knife. JT had gotten it from Samantha. It was one of the heirlooms that she entrusted him with after she got sick, along with the yellowed 1941 newspapers that the police had found in JT's nightstand, their mother's watch, and other personal items. JT had kept it in a safe place in the apartment after Samantha's death. He buried it in the backyard under the deck after using it to kill Tyler. Samantha had made him promise that he'd never lose it and that he would give it away only to a museum. So it was easy to look into JT's mind and understand why he'd kept it even after he'd turned it into a murder weapon. The harder thing to understand was why he had wanted Tyler dead.
We do not gather here today to dwell on the why or what of sin, the Reverend Otis Brown said, standing beside the casket. The Bible teaches that whoever keeps the whole law but fails in one point has become accountable for all of it. For he who said, "Do not commit adultery," also said, "Do not murder."
I blinked, for he who mentioned murder had been looking right at me when he said adultery.
It is not the size of the sin, but the lack of faith that separates us from God.
J.T. was a troubled man, but he was not the face of evil. Let us pray that he has met the face of forgiveness and found eternal life. Can I get an amen?
Amen,
Luther and I said softly. A pair of blue jays called in the pine tree behind us. The preacher returned to the folding chair beside Luther and consoled him. I rose and went to the CD player. I'd selected one piece. It was the song that JT and I had sung together in his apartment, the one Samantha used to sing to her brother. Be grateful. The service ended by 3 o'clock. Luther and I said goodbye to the minister. We were less than 50 yards from Samantha's grave, and I suggested that we visit it.
You go on, said Luther. I want to sit a spell.
I let him be and walked down the gravel path to visit Samantha's grave. It was a quiet and peaceful walk. And lonely. Literally hundreds of mourners had followed me down the same path for Samantha's burial. I heard many of them sobbing and crying behind me. I could still hear them. How you holding up, Abe? I stopped. I wasn't imagining things. Rid was standing in the shade of the biggest oak tree in the cemetery. We were a dozen or more gravestones away from Samantha's marker.
Okay, I guess.
A little worried about Luther.
Can't believe it was his knife, you know that.
I know. The sun was beating down and forcing me to squint. I moved into the shade closer to Rid.
You are welcome to join us, I said.
You didn't have to watch from a distance. This is close enough, he said. Don't want to disrespect Tyler's family.
I understand.
He went to the bench beneath the tree and sat. You know this isn't over.
Yes, it is.
JT killed her. And a story. The knife wasn't the only proof. Until Ridge showed me the rental agreement signed on the day of Tyler's death, I'd been under the outdated impression that all rental car companies required a credit card. The irony was that I had pushed JT to get his license and even co-signed for his debit card as part of getting his life together. The debit charge led MDPD to the rental office, and from there, they tracked down the car. Traces of Tyler's blood were still in the trunk.
Santos isn't going to go away, Ridge said. The motive is a sticking point.
Exactly where he had killed Tyler was also unknown. Such a tiny amount of blood in the trunk suggested that the fatal blow had been delivered after the car ride, probably not far from where he'd dumped the body, most of the bloody evidence swallowed by the Everglades. The lack of ligature marks meant that he'd probably knocked her unconscious before taking her there, perhaps hitting her with the flat side of the blade. But as Ridd had pointed out earlier that week, a headless corpse offered no way to confirm a skull fracture or contusion. Had JT followed her in his rental car and abducted her while she was out jogging? Had he used the fact that he was Abe Beckham's brother-in-law to trick her into meeting him somewhere? Only one question really mattered anymore. Why?
Motives can be complicated, I said.
Especially for someone like JT. He leaned forward, his expression serious. Santos doesn't believe that JT wanted Tyler dead. She believes he killed her because someone else wanted her dead.
JT the hitman.
You need to take this seriously, Abe. There are lots of possibilities. Santos will consider all of them. And most involve you. I went to the bench and sat beside him. We were facing in the direction of Samantha's grave, a long row of stone monuments before us.
What is she thinking?
That you're a married man who needed to eliminate one of the world's oldest problems. One theory has you asking JT to kill Tyler. Another has JT doing it on his own, thinking he was doing you a favor. That didn't happen. It makes more sense than JT killing Tyler for no reason at all.
He had a reason.
You gonna just keep it all to yourself?
I stared off into the middle distance.
Yep. He shook his head and rose.
Okay. Hope that works out for you.
Me too. At least as long as Luther is alive. He laid a hand on my shoulder.
Take care of yourself.
I nodded and watched him walk away. I remained seated on the bench for a minute longer. Then I got up slowly and started toward Samantha's grave. It hurt to put one foot in front of the other, but only on the inside. Probably not unlike the hurt that had tormented JT after Samantha's death. Tyler had called the apartment where Samantha and I once lived. Maybe she really did want to blow the whistle on Cortina Sugar for crimes committed in Nicaragua. More likely, it was all an excuse to hook up with me again, since a Miami prosecutor was powerless to do anything about crimes in Nicaragua. The first time she'd called, JT didn't answer. She'd left a message for me on our old answering machine, which had never been erased, and which Santos Ridd and I had listened to. But was that the only call? How was anyone to know that Tyler hadn't called again? And what if JT had spoken to her? There would have been no record of it because JT had picked up the landline. He could have spoken to Tyler, and no one but Tyler and JT would have known about it. Santos Ridd and I had focused only on the voicemail message. But maybe it was their conversation, a conversation we knew nothing about, that had convinced JT that Tyler was gunning for me. I stopped before Samantha's grave. The grass was freshly mowed. A recent visitor had left a bouquet of fresh flowers. There was no card, anonymous. Samantha had so many friends, so many people who loved her.
I'm sorry, Samantha.
Killing Tyler was JT's redemption. Tyler's punishment was the price of sin, a sin that JT had known about only because he'd been fooling around with my phone one day and seen the explicit evidence of its commission. Tyler was a little younger and a lot more careless in those days, and I could only assume that JT's uncovering of her sexting to me was the reason she would later take the extreme precaution of a prepaid cell phone, no texting. In any event, that dirty old secret was now entirely with me, the other sinner. There's no shame in dying. It's a crying shame to die of a broken heart. Samantha didn't die of a broken heart. She died with a broken heart. I never cheated on Angelina, but I had cheated on my wife. I fell to my knees and touched the grass on Samantha's grave.
So sorry, I whispered.
Tyler's death was an imperfect justice, but it was justice in JT's mind. Right or wrong, JT never blamed me for my mistake with Tyler. At least, not after Samantha told him that she'd forgiven me and that he too must forgive me. JT blamed Tyler alone for Samantha's broken heart. He blamed himself for the fact that he couldn't save his own sister with a bone marrow transplant because he wasn't a match. He did what he thought he had to do to make things right. In a manner of speaking, Tyler Tompkins died of a broken heart. Samantha's. Epilogue. 10 months later. Christmas cane. Some say it is the sweetest sugarcane of all. That's a lie, of course, just an excuse cooked up to justify Big Sugar's refusal to stop the harvest and give its workers a day off on Christmas. Over time, lies and excuses can become truth. Angelina was one of those people who couldn't wait for Christmas.
The Thanksgiving turkey was barely cold before she ran to the firefighter's lot to buy the perfect Fraser fir. Most people had predicted that our marriage would be over by Easter, Memorial Day, or at the latest, the 4th of July. We'd taken a 2-month break, our marriage counselor's euphemism for separation. But we were back together, which was more than could be said for Brian Belter and his soon-to-be ex-wife. They had all but resorted to chemical, nuclear, and other weapons of mass destruction in their very public divorce war. Step 2 in his personal and professional demise was just around the corner. A criminal indictment on charges of attempted bribery. Happy New Year. But speculation about the Beckhams was not unwarranted. "Abe, honey, can you run to the store and buy some shallots?" Angelina was in the kitchen. I was sitting in front of the television watching two college football teams in a Christmas Eve bowl game that I didn't care about. "Sure," I shouted back.
"What the hell's a shallot?"
"And some brown sugar."
"Yep."
"They close at 4 today, so hurry."
I grabbed my car keys and headed out the door. Angelina and I had stopped trying to have a baby. Not that we'd ever gotten started. Making love was off the agenda during our separation. At the 2-month mark, our counselor suggested a reunion to see where we were. The theory was that I'd never given Angelina a shot, that no woman would have stood a chance on the heels of Samantha's death. Sex wasn't supposed to be part of the reunion weekend. In fact, the counselor had advised against it. When it happened, I pulled out at climax. "Good call," she'd whispered in my ear. "I'll go back on the pill." End of discussion. It still seemed curious that the first time Angelina had ever mentioned a baby lunch at the Big Fish restaurant on the Miami River was the same day the news stations reported that Tyler Tompkins was dead. Strange coincidence or not? Whatever I thought of it, Rid's words came back to me. "Angelina's messing with you, Abe. She's been messing with you." I backed the car out of the garage and stopped at the end of the driveway. Brown sugar and what? It came to me and I drove to the grocery store, past palm trees covered with twinkling lights and other signs of the holidays in South Florida. Agent Santos had moved on, literally. I never found out what she had done to piss off the powers that be at FBI headquarters, but she'd done her penance in the Miami field office, and her reassignment was short-lived. She was back in Quantico with the behavioral analysis unit where she belonged. I'd thought about sending her a congratulatory note, but never got around to it. Or maybe I feared that her reply would be something along the lines of, "I'm not finished with you, Beckham. Or your wife. Excuse me, where are your Skittles?" I asked the stock boy.
"Aisle 7.
I wasted 5 minutes in the candy section before realizing that I'd misspoken. I found the shallots and brown sugar, spent another 15 minutes in the so-called express checkout lane, and headed home. Angelina and I didn't talk about Tyler's death anymore, or JT's. It had taken months for her to open up to me. I was still undecided about what to do with her confession. There had been no second phone call from Tyler to JT. The lone voicemail message had been their only communication, which by itself wasn't nearly enough to set JT off and convince him that Tyler was coming back for me. The photographs of Tyler and me in the restaurant had pushed JT over the edge. He'd gotten them from Angelina. I dialed Angelina from my car.
"Got what you needed," I said.
"Thanks, honey. Hurry home."
Angelina's mother was a smart woman. Smart enough to have seen how unhappy her daughter was in her marriage. The proverbial other woman had been Margaret's immediate suspicion. The private investigator that Margaret had hired to follow me on my trip to Orlando had earned his money with those photographs of Tyler and me. Why Angelina had showed them to JT was a mystery to me.
We'd talked about it for the last time over the Labor Day weekend. She told me that she was merely gathering all the information she could about Tyler, and that she wanted to see if JT knew the truth about Tyler and me. Her explanation was plausible. But there was another possibility. One that played on JT's paranoia, fears, and vulnerability. Had Angelina gone to JT and presented Tyler Tompkins as a common enemy that needed to be eliminated? No, she'd told me. Absolutely not, Abe. But I had my suspicions. Back then, I was still using Samantha's birthday as my iPhone password. And it would only have made Angelina angrier when she guessed it. Who else would have answered my ringing cell phone when I was in the shower and had a 2-minute conversation with Tyler? Who else would have continued to check my voicemail and deleted 4 separate messages from Tyler? Who else could have overheard me talking to Ridd or Santos about Cutter's signature? And why else would she have smeared ash on the photographs and sent them to herself, making it look as though Cutter had killed Tyler and was coming after her? Why else would she run? Angelina didn't run because she thought she was going to be Cutter's next victim. She didn't run to teach me a lesson or because she was afraid of me. Angelina ran because she knew JT had killed Tyler Tompkins. She feared that he was going to name her as his accomplice, the person who had put the idea in his head and perhaps encouraged him to do it. Maybe she'd gone even further, convinced Tyler to meet someplace private to talk woman to other woman, sent JT in her place, and then helped JT rent the car that he or they had used to dump the body in the Everglades. She'd panicked in the middle of the night, hawked Samantha's ring at a pawn shop, bummed a ride from 2 young women to the Miccosukee Resort in the Everglades, and tossed her cell phone on the Tamiami Trail as they passed the spot where Tyler's body had been recovered. "Hey, girls, I'm feeling carsick back here. I'm going to roll down the window." She'd tried to disappear, only to return 2 days later after realizing how much work it really is to make yourself vanish. I couldn't prove that. I didn't even want to think it. But sometimes I wondered. Sometimes I still thought she was messing with me. I laid the shallots and brown sugar on the kitchen counter. "Here you go."
"Thanks, honey."
She was smiling. Angelina was happy these days and getting really big. The pill, our OBGYN explained, was 99.5% effective, not 100%. I sometimes wondered if Angelina had really been taking it, and if our reunion had been planned around her most fertile time of the month. But I put bad thoughts aside. We had a baby girl on the way. Life was good, right?
"Dinner will be ready at 6.
"Great," I said. "What are we having?"
"Your favorite, osso buco."
Yes. Angelina was still messing with me. It made me wonder which dinner would be our last.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Cain and Abe by James Grappando. This program was produced by John Marshall Media, recorded by Terrell Harrell. Executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2014 by James Grappando. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.